5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
It's the new Panic Room. It's the show other shows want to be, and the show that authors want to be on.
The all-new Panic Room radio show is brought to you by HellboundBooks.com.
Well, good evening. It is the new Panic Room, episode 240, on what promises to be July the 22nd, 2021, in the aftertimes, in this sort of post-apocalyptic landscape in which we dwell now. Although, you know, having said that, here in good old Texas, you know, you don't have to wear your masks. Some people do. Some people still wear them while driving in their own car by themselves. But, you know, I think that's more about, you know, being stupid than the pandemic, to be honest. Things are bit by bit returning to normal, which is kind of jolly. I think we're all ready for it. But anywho, I have missed her this past week, so I think we'll bring her on right now.
I'm tired for some reason tonight, and usually, you know, right around, you know, 10 o'clock my time, I get my second wind, and today I'm just, you know, like, oh, is it bedtime yet?
I know, I'm the same. I've had a week. My new dog, I mean, regular listeners will have heard the saga of the new dog, who got knocked up by one of our other dogs. Long story. People have actually said, oh, how did that happen? Is it seriously, you know, or, you know, when a mummy dog and a daddy dog sort of love each other very much, etc. But she went into labor sort of last night, and she's still in fucking labor right now. So if I apologize to our listeners, if I suddenly have to dash off, she's in the capable hands of my daughter at the moment. If I have to suddenly dash off because things are starting to happen, poor thing's been miserable all day. She's actually in the throes of labour right now, and I didn't know. I mean, obviously, I've been through human births, so I know that can drag on a bit. My first son, 27 hours. My first ex-wife was in, and you know the worst part about it was I was expected to sit through it all. So, you know,
that is the worst.
It was
No,
I was just bloody selfish, to be honest. I had better things to do, to be honest with you. Sit through listening to whining and complaining for 27 hours, you know. But I have a friend back in England who is actually a dog breeder, which is great. I mean, you know, she popped back into my life just in time. And she said, oh, no, it can be like this for a couple of days. I thought, you know, the mucus plug pops out, which it did, because I had to clean that off the sofa. And then, you know, she'll pant for an hour and pop, 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 all the puppies come out, and apparently not.
Yeah.
Apparently. No, it's like on the movies, they show the waters break. And then the baby's out 10 minutes later. The waters can break a week before. It doesn't mean you know, birth, I guess we all know that, but she's poor little mite. I mean, my daughter's been really good with her. She's just sort of looks, I mean, she's panting, and she's not in pain. She's obviously in discomfort. You can see the puppies literally fighting to get out. It's like Alien in there.
Wow.
Her little belly's just moving and writhing. And it's, oh, poor thing, you know. No wonder she's looking uncomfortable. you know, it may happen during the show. It might. That'd be great. Actually, we should do it. Just have live puppy birth on the show. It'd be brilliant. But it could happen in the middle of the night. It could happen tomorrow. It could be. Oh, it's just. I feel for the. I feel really bad for the dog. I just. You know, just want it over and done with for her. You know, because she just looks so. Yeah. So it's just like, what the fuck is going on with me?
I have a really fun pet story. A couple nights ago, I was getting Misha out, and, you know, she's just now, within probably the last month, she's gotten big enough to, you know, ride on the, you know, on the back of your neck, you know, the way you do. And because before she was too small for that. So anyway, so she's up there and everything's good. And I'm like, look at my little snake. She's just, you know, sweet. And then all of a sudden I like hear this weird noise and then feel this. Just, there was like snake poo and pee just all over. It was like an explosion. And and part of it, oh my gosh. It was, I swear to you, it was filling up my bra. It was, and I couldn't do anything but just sit there like, oh my gosh. And of course the boyfriend's jumping up and he's trying to get paper towels and I'm like, yeah, that's not going to cut it, you know?
No. No, you just need a hot shower. I mean, there's probably on the list of things you don't want in your bra. I think snake poo is probably pretty high up there, I think.
Oh,
pretty high
gosh,
up there,
I was trauma.
Oh, bless
and
her.
I've been
it means she loves you.
This was a whole nother level. It was.
Oh, my goodness.
And of course, and the boyfriend's apologizing. I'm like it's your fault. You know, I mean, like you did something or, you know. Mm-hmm. And I'm not mad at her. We got her out again last night, and I was happy that she didn't poop on me. So,
yeah.
But, yeah, it was something. And, man, I cannot, you know, of course, but snake poo is got to be the worst smelling. It's awful. It is so bad. And I was traumatized for quite a while. I think I still have nightmares about it because I woke up today and I'm like, I think I smell it. And I'm like, I took a shower. I washed all my clothes. I still smell it. So,
It is. For anybody who doesn't have pets, reptile poo it's awful. My daughter among other things, has a bearded dragon in her room. And, you know, he's not massive. He's not huge. I mean, we have an iguana. Who is he? I mean, he's big, but this little bearded dragon, and he poops and he can stink the entire upstairs out. It is nasty, you know. So, but yeah, there's something about something in reptile poo that is just particularly horrible. Although the ferret actually pooed down me when she was little. We were bathing her, and India handed her to me to hold her while she went to get a towel. And of course, she just this big squirty poo all down my front. And I was just like, that was awful. That was terrible. But we should have a feature on the show, you know, who's been pooped on by the most the most bizarre animal, you know. I think snakes and ferrets and lizards have got to be up there. But we should put it on 11 questions. You know, what animal have you been pooped on by?
I like that. You know what? I'm going to add that. I am. Yeah.
Put it on the air. What animal has pooped on? Because I mean, you'll guarantee everybody at some point has been pooped on by something. Even if it's you know, you've been pooped on by a bird flying overhead. You know, that's happened.
That's not been pooped on by yet, so I'm happy.
No, really?
No bird poop,
So, anywho, we always end up, it's always poo with us, isn't it? It's always end up with poo. What have we got coming up on the show this evening?
This evening on the Panagram, our first guest is R.B. Wood. He is a writer of speculative and dark thrillers. And then later on in the show, we're going to have horror author H.R. Boldwood. So it's going to be an
amazing show. Wow, sounds like another rip-roaring, thigh-slapping show, which is great. and I don't often say this, you know, it's all credit to you. I did nothing. I seriously, the listener needs to know this, I have no input. Apart from every now and then I'll say, oh, how about we have this person on? You know, somebody crosses my path or whatever.
Yeah.
Other than that, I'm useless. I do nothing to contribute to this wonderful show. You know, I turn up and wing it for an hour and a half. That's my input. But, you know, I'm the talent. You know, let's face it. You know.
You are. And you push the buttons. You push the buttons. And,
I do.
And I panic.
To be fair,
something. Yeah.
I don't always push them correctly, as we find out from time to time. That happens
true,
as well.
Yeah.
You know, but and I always say I'll fix it in post production. Never have. Always leave it in because I think it makes us more lovable.
I think so, too. You said that last week. You're like, oh, I'll fix that in post. And I'm, like, whispering under my breath, no, you won't.
That's never going to happen. Never going to happen. So, anyway, I think without further ado, we should can introduce our first guest.
All righty. Our first guest is writer of speculative and dark thrillers, R.B. Wood.
Hello.
So I want to know who hit the button for that.
We actually have the, you know, the studio crew here in the studio. So that was live.
Yes,
that was live.
They're excitable.
I don't honestly know how I compete with dueling banjos and reptile poo.
Right?
It is big shoes to fill, which are big, or bra to fill in Xtina's case, which is just the most. Hopefully next week I will be able to regale our listeners with tales of dog labour and dog birth. So that if we want to have a whole gross out thing, and of course I'm going to ask every guest that comes on over the next few weeks if they do want a puppy, because we're going to suddenly have a house full of puppies that my daughter wants to keep them, but we've got three already. We just don't need any more dogs. But so anyway, Albert, thank you so much for joining us. It's an absolute pleasure to finally get to chat to you. You're here to talk about your book, Bayou Whispers, which I believe is with Crystal Lake.
It is.
That's correct.
It is.
And
but the audiobook is with Hellbound Books, which is tremendous.
We're working on it now. Yeah.
Brilliant.
Production.
It's Christina, right? She did the work. She seems to do the work for all the men. Actually, that's kind of a whole gender thing, isn't it? The women do all the work and the men just puff about. Anyway,
well, to be fair, you've literally defined the business plan for Hellbound Books there. But Xtina does everything, and I take the credit.
That's
so it's obviously working. That's great. It's working. Brilliant.
Hurrah! That's not true at all.
But we found the perfect voice actress, I think.
Mm.
I don't know how you feel about it, but I think we found the perfect voice actress to narrate and tell this story. So I'm excited.
Yes.
I can't wait for the audio book to come out.
Brilliant.
Yes, she's wonderful. It's funny, we went through a bunch of male actors voice actors who were really good, and you know, he's like, I really love to hear a lady. And first one, he was like, wow, this is it. This is her. And that was amazing.
Fantastic. Yeah.
And I've told James before that, you know, with the audiobooks, because, you know, I have, you know, I do the auditions and you know, we go through it with the authors. And by the time it goes live, it feels like my baby too, and it's so much fun when we and we're gonna you know what, when we do get it all done and we're ready you know for it to go live, we need to get you on the show as well as her, because I think that's so much fun when I can bring the author and the narrator together, and it just it makes a really fun show. So we definitely have to make that happen.
That would be delightful.
I love that.
I would love to do that.
Yes, I will. I will set that up.
And Xtina will make sure we'll make it happen, because by magic, it happens.
That's
it
what
does.
I do.
Just things happen, which is kind of cool. But sorry, go on.
Go ahead.
I was just going to compliment Xtina again. The women create life, and they do all the work. I mean, you know, we sit in lounge chairs sipping Mai Tais all day. And I'm very comfortable with that role.
Absolutely. I'm right there with you.
So you want to hear about Bayou Whispers. It's the story of a no-nonce New Orleans native, Jeanine LaRue, the sole survivor of her family after the devastation brought on by Hurricane Katrina. In the aftermath of the storm, she believed she'd been saved, but soon found herself held hostage and abused, rescued months later by Sheriff's Deputy Curtis Jones. Fast forward 12 years after Katrina, Jeanine is a new attorney who returns to New Orleans to save her old friend Curtis Jones, now a local thief and trafficker of stolen goods. And there's a whole story behind that, of course. After he's arrested for the murder of Jeanine's captors, whose bodies have recently been found. But Jeanine discovers more than she bargained for when she uncovers a family history of dark voodoo magic and an unholy alliance with an ancient evil Haitian god called Aloha. It is what I would call a supernatural thriller with significant horror elements. But I'm making that up. I'm pulling that out of my backside. I started writing a Southern Gothic story, and it went wonderfully wrong, which is where Bayou Whispers came into being.
Yeah, I love atmosphere when I'm reading a book, and I think that I remember reading something. I think it was V.C. Andrews long when I was a teen, and it was set in Louisiana in the bayous, and for me, I didn't have to have any story. I was just so fascinated by the setting, and even when it comes to movies and stuff, I just love a good setting. So right away, I'm like intrigued. Right away, I'm like, ooh, because I love the whole picture and just the setting. So I'm excited right away about it. And is it going to be a standalone, or because these characters just seem to be more than just one book. You know, to me, they just seem bigger than that.
Well, thank you for that. I'll take that as an absolute compliment, as well as the setting component, specifically because without the characters, you don't have a story. And I spent a lot of time on my characters. You know, the main character, Jeanine LaRue, is an incredibly strong and intelligent person who's been through a great deal of trauma, right? Something we all can sign off on. It was mentioned earlier in the show by James, I think, about the whole COVID-19 pandemic, and I think that's why the story is timely. It takes that sort of trauma that everybody has experienced, and you show and you read about somebody who overcomes it to become who she is. And I love strong characters, especially strong female characters. You know, my mother would shoot me if she were alive today by saying this on the air, but, I grew up with strong women characters. My grandmothers on both sides, my mother, my sister, my wife is an incredibly strong and very intelligent individual, far more so than I am. And and those are the characters that are the most fascinating to me, people who have overcome adversity. And I think this story tells that tale, and you step on the gas from the first page, And I don't let up until the end. I've had people call me at 3 o'clock in the morning saying, "I just finished your book, damn you," and I have to go to work in 3 hours.
I love that.
I don't
that.
Pick up the phone. They leave that as a voicemail. I'm not completely stupid, but, you know.
Good for you.
Definitely. And yeah, I'm the same way. I think that I remember years back when we had the 50 Shades of Grey blew up and everybody was talking about these, you know, these books. And that was like the one thing that one of my many complaints of the book and the story and everything was the character, you know, the main character was just this weak female, and I'm like, oh God, I can't do it either. I just can't do the weak, you know, feminine, oh my goodness, oh, I'm going to bat my eyelashes. No, I want a strong chick, you know, and
I'm by her lip. I remember reading that, and I think she bites her lip one more time. I am going to barf, and it's just every other page, and she bit her lip off. Seriously, woman. And I mean, it made the whole thing for me just horribly creepy. He just took full advantage of her. He basically abused her. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was just, and yeah, it was all this romance and it was this. And no, it was. It was literally. It was three books about abuse, and it was like, you know.
Now I do have to say that I enjoyed the movies because I think they made the character more badass. Like some of the lines she did that were cringy in the book, they made him kind of humorous in the movie. And I was like, wow, I can get behind this Anna. So definitely I liked what they did with the movies a lot better.
Oh, I haven't, you know, if I said, to be fair, if I wanted to watch that sort of, you know, I'd go to Pornhub and watch some decent pornography, to be honest.
Yeah, it's true.
A friend told me that's where you can see bare ladies and things. I never really bothered with such things, to be honest.
Then we won't talk about your subscription on air, then.
Probably best not. Or the chat room that you and I frequent there, RB. You know, we said we'd keep that quiet, so my lips are sealed.
Oh, what a giveaway.
There was a meme that my kid was sharing around, and it was some porn actors, and you know, I had no idea who this person was, and so he says her name, and then you know, the boyfriend's like, yeah, that's blah, and I'm like, how do you know who this is? So, you know, they both knew who this porn actress is, but I, yeah, exactly. Yeah. I didn't even know, so sticking around, yeah.
I'm just glad the internet wasn't around when I was a kid.
Yes, it's true. We got into just as much trouble, but there was no evidence of it. And I'm happy with that.
Exactly. As far as anybody's aware, I was a saint.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
Me too.
Yep.
Me too. I even now, my dad, I mean, you know, the stuff he still doesn't know that I got up to. And I shudder. I say, geez, like you say, had that been all over Instagram or TikTok back in the day, I mean, there are a couple of things out there on the internet that, moving on.
Oh, God.
that is a story for a whole different show. The majority of the stuff I got up to my younger days, had that been, it makes me cringe. I have to have the conversation certainly with my daughter, because she's big into TikTok and all of that, Instagram, you know, all that sort of stuff. Just for fuck's sake, just be careful what you post.
Mm-hmm.
Please, you know, because it's there and it's there forever.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the worst of it, you know.
Definitely. I've talked before on the show about being in some of the groups on Facebook for, you know, mothers of teen boys, you know, because I got a 17-year-old son. And there's always these conversations about, do you look in your son's phones? Do you, you know, monitor what they're doing online? And I'm like, Hell no.
No.
I don't want to know. I'm glad my mom didn't know what I was up to when I was 17, and I'm good not knowing. And, you know, I think that's how it should be. I really do. You know, we turned out fine, mostly. And our parents didn't know, so we definitely do not need to know. We definitely don't, and I'm glad that I don't. So
yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I'm a big right. believer in let them have the privacy, because, like you say, I just don't want to know. I really, definitely. Really don't want to know.
Well, that's three, so that's unanimous. I have to say, my daughter just turned 21, and she's working out in Colorado, and she invited me to look at her Instagram, and I went, yeah, I don't think I will. Thank you, darling, but no, I don't need to see that, anything. And I've seen enough of her Twitter feed to know that I just shouldn't be anywhere near that. TikTok,
yes.
anything along those lines.
Absolutely, absolutely, yeah.
So getting back to Bayou Whispers, RB, I think that I think we have a clip to play. Do we need to set it up or anything?
No, this is the prologue. This is the part of the story that takes place before Janine is an adult. And it is your introduction to Janine and your introduction to Curtis Jones. And that's it. That's all you need. And give it a listen. And I apologize to if the voice actress who's doing Bayou Whispers is listening. I apologize in advance for her.
Okay. Right, then I'm going to press the button. Hopefully, I mean, it's hit and miss. Hopefully it's the right button. But let's see if I can manage that much, shall we? Here we go.
31 October 2005. Orleans Parish, Louisiana. On Halloween night that year, no little ghosts or goblins wandered the streets in search of candy. No laughter rang out in what was left of the Lower Ninth Ward neighborhood. 2 months after Katrina had ravaged this place, it still resembled a war zone covered in debris and stagnant pools of foul-smelling water from the levee breach. As midnight approached, a young teenager, naked, dirty, covered in mosquito bites, and with nasty leg wound wrapped in crusted over gray rags, stumbled from a copse of trees. She was thin, so very thin, weighing barely 80 pounds. The muddy and cracked streets before her sat dark and empty. Human detritus littered the roads and yards, and the skeletons of ruined homes bore unintelligible spray paint that looked more like the desperate scratching of a fluorescent wild beast than symbols from a nameless insurance company or traumatized recovery workers. It was a city of the dead, a city of the damned. Right foot, left foot drag, one step at a time. The pain didn't matter. It can't matter. Janine had been walking for what felt like forever, almost in a trance, placing one bloody foot in front of the other. Moving forward was the only thing that mattered. Keep moving. Those white guys might be following. Keep moving. Right foot, left foot drag. She walked through glass and rusted nails, around junked appliances and damp, moldy couches. A dog barked once in the distance. A patrol car sat watch at the end of the street, engine idling. Janine approached, fear causing each step to hesitate. The light of a burning cigarette brightened as the occupant of the vehicle, still in shadow, took a long drag. "Help," croaked Janine, her voice strained, rough. Insects chirped. Frogs called to their mates. No one heard her. Right foot, left foot drag. The person in the car took another pull, a dot of orange light flaring, then fading. "Help," she called, louder this time. The insects and the frogs stopped. The patrol car's dome light winked on as the door opened. Janine screamed. She screamed as the cop ran towards her. She screamed as the cop took off his own shirt to wrap around her. She screamed as the cop carried her to the car. "Jesus H. Christ, Randy, call for an ambulance," yelled the cop. The cop's partner, still inside the car, got on the radio. Janine continued to scream until her vocal cords tore. She tasted blood. "You're safe, honey," said the cop for the seventh time. Janine finally heard him. He stayed with her until the ambulance arrived and then rode with her to the hospital. He spoke to the doctors on her behalf. He sat with her in intensive care while Janine, clean for the first time in months, slept. He watched her tossing, turning, and moaning softly. Randy, the cop's partner, arrived at the hospital. He'd taken care of the paperwork and had brought a po' boy and a coffee. The sandwich was left untouched. For the next hour, the partner sat a silent vigil over Janine. The first cop must have drifted off because he woke with a start when someone placed a hand on his shoulder. "Officer Jones?" asked a man in scrubs. "I'm Dr. Broussard. Can we talk outside for a minute?" The cop looked to his partner and he nodded back at him. "Go," said Randy. "I'll be here." Jones followed the doctor into the hallway. "Officer, we can't find any of," he glanced at the clipboard, "Janine's family. I wanted to let you know that in the morning, and assuming she's still stable," the doctor let his words drift off as he swallowed hard. Jones noticed the man's youth, how inexperienced he must have been before Katrina hit. The doctor looked like some of the baby-faced soldiers Curtis had met during the war, young men, children really, who grew up quickly in the face of tragedy and death. Jones put his hand on the doctor's shoulder. "Yes, sorry," said Dr. Broussard. "It's been a long couple of months of giving out bad news." "I understand," said Jones automatically. "Just hit me with it, Doc." "Janine, we're going to have to remove her leg. The infection is too severe and there's gangrene." "Do what you have to," said Jones impassively. But without parental, will the surgery save her life?" "Yes." "Take her leg then," Jones' left eye twitched once. Dr. Broussard nodded. "I'll need you to sign." A moment later, Jones returned to Janine's room. "Well?" asked Randy. Jones slumped into a chair. "They're going to take it in the morning." Suddenly, Janine sat up, ice blue eyes wide, unblinking. It was those eyes that had thrown him. This young teen, he'd met her once before the storm. He didn't recognize her at first, as she practically crawled from the bayou, filthy and emaciated. The last time Curtis had seen her, she'd been covered in blood. She had brown eyes then. He remembered them, unblinking and staring into a nightmare of unimaginable horror. Jane Doe was Janine LaRue. Jones was sure being a child of mixed-race parents was hard enough to grow up with in this town, but this young woman had experienced far more and far worse than her 14 years had prepared her for. Jones knew who she was now. She'd been returned, unlike so many of those in the missing persons reports. The details of so many lost souls broken down into height, weight, and hair color. "You all right, Janine?" he asked. She looked at Jones, eyes unfocused from the drugs the doctors had pumped into her. "Papa Nightmare is here," she said in a frantic whisper. "Papa Nightmare!" "Shh. It's all right, honey. You're safe now. I'm here, and I won't leave you." Janine blankly looked at Jones, and he gently helped her lie back down. "Right foot. Left foot," she muttered, as her eyes fluttered once more before closing. The drugs took a lasting hold, and Janine's breathing slowed. She spoke occasionally, nonsense words mostly. Jones held her hand for the rest of that night. "You're safe," he whispered again. "Promise."
Wow. Wow. That was really good.
Beautifully read as well. You don't need a narrator. You should just narrate it yourself,
really good.
In my opinion.
Oh, well, thank you very much for that. I appreciate it. That was probably the third or fourth take I'd done. Poor Xtina is going, "I need that recording." "I'll get it to you. I promise. I swear to God, I'll get it to you. Don't kill me." But
no, it was really good. I'm an awful reader, so I can tell you that was great. And there was a part there where I have it on my screen as well. I was kind of reading along with you, and I was so into it that I forgot to swallow, and then my throat got like really dry, and so I definitely needed more. This will be an audiobook. Oh, and when you go to sign the book for me, that's Xtina.
Okay. I knew that was coming. I knew that was coming.
It just so happens 2 days ago I got a whole fresh supply of them as well.
Awesome. I like the sound of that.
and I accept cash, check, or PayPal. So, you know.
Nice. Well done. That's it. Yeah. Well done. You make a pay. I wouldn't accept a check because just between you and I wouldn't. I'd have cash.
Oh yeah, fair enough. We'll talk later, James. Back when we're in the
Yeah, I shall look forward to that. So look forward to seeing you there.
My biggest concern with this story is I was originally going to write it from Curtis's perspective, but I wasn't doing the story I wanted to tell justice. So Jeanine LaRue came into being. A part of her is a friend of mine who passed away from colon cancer. Her name was Jeanine years ago. But there's a lot of, she's an amalgam of a lot of people I know. And, but I was concerned because she is of mixed race and that plays into it in the story. But I got some very nice letters from people of color and people of mixed race who said that you did the person justice. And she is a great character. I love her to pieces. And that's how I know I've developed the character properly is, you know, you start having feelings for these made up people that you are, you know, you're spending a lot of time with. And I hope I did her namesake and women in general and justice. I like to think I did, but you know, you'll tell me. I'm sure you will, Xtina.
Definitely, just from the prologue alone, I think they're very solid characters, and that is definitely when I'm reading, I'm big on the characters, and sometimes the story is even secondary to the characters. I mean, I just like well-rounded, real characters, and I think that there's often times when I'm reading something and I'm just like, man, this would be so much better if they just took the time to flesh these characters out more. And because then it's not true that you really don't need a story, but I mean, there's a lot of time. It's kind of like Stephen King, he can rattle on and on and on about absolutely nothing, but we connect with the characters so that it's okay. We'll just sit there and listen to him ramble on about absolutely nothing and still be entertained. So that's what I,
Salem's Law came out in the 70s, right? So, and I'm pretty old guy. So I'm probably on my fourth copy of that particular book.
Wow.
And, you know, whilst part of it is is certainly dated. The characters are not. The characters are bloody brilliant.
Yeah.
And and he does a great job with the small town horror. And I think my friend and the person who did the hosting for my launch party, Todd Kiesling, wrote a small town horror that I think is on par with Salem's Lot. In fact, he got a nom for he got a Bram Stoker nom this past year.
Right.
Of course, Stephen Graham Jones won it, but you know, but I think he's going to win everything this year. I asked him to take a couple of years off so a couple of us could get a shot at the prize. he didn't respond. So.
Well, you know, he's not surprised because he's Stephen Graham. I must admit, he's a great guy. I met him in the before time, so it would have been in 2019. I actually went to a book launch of his, and I must admit, Mongrels is one of my favourite. I mean, I'm a big werewolf fan anyway. One of my not just one of my favourite werewolf books. Yeah.
it's a delightful werewolf story, and believe it or not, a book that that he wrote back in 2012, All the Beautiful Sinners, was the one that hooked me on him. I mean, this is a serial killer story, and there's a flashback in the book, and you see what happens when Janine is captured. You don't see the graphic; it's just detail. It's hinted at, but these guys capture her, and it's kind of an homage to Stephen Graham Jones and All the Beautiful Sinners and his fireman character.
Mm-hmm.
So, but, you know, you mentioned characters, Christina. New Orleans is itself a character in this book. I tried to write it that way. Did I pull it off? I don't know. You'll have to tell me. But New Orleans, there's no city like it in the world, and the people who live there are characters themselves. I used to spend a lot of time working and consulting in the South, and I worked and played in New Orleans quite a bit. And I went back just in the before times, as James, as you say, you know, before we all grabbed our carts and went on the road, as Mr. McCormick McCarthy would say. I went back down to New Orleans and talked to people, and there were a lot of people that I spoke to, and of course you're in a bar when you're doing it, right? And because that's when people are really willing to open up.
Mm-hmm.
And like everybody in the bar practically had a fleur-de-lis tattoo of some kind. And now there's symbolism with that, which is positive and negative. And I asked about it, finally, because I was really curious, because it wasn't just one or two people. It was most of the people I spoke to in the bar. And the response I got is, if you were here during Katrina, you got this tattoo because, you know, that was I survived Katrina celebration.
Oh, wow.
And,
oh, fantastic.
And, like, we're referring to COVID as before COVID is the before times. They refer to recent time as before Katrina and after Katrina. And it's interesting, the impact, the psychological impact that storm had in that region. And every time a big storm heads that way, you know, you can see it in people's faces. You know, their faces drain of blood. They, you know, they're packing stuff up. They're making sure relatives are here, and here's these phones and all the rest of that stuff. It's unbelievable, and the people are lovely. The people are down to earth. They're real salt of the earth type of individuals, and I wanted to portray that, and I wanted to show that, and that's where the story is. There's a boatload of characters. It's a short novel. It's only 60,000 words or so, but there's a lot of characters, and they're all very individual. You know, Curtis was a cop. He's become kind of a trafficker in stolen goods now, so he's got a crew of people with him, and they're all very unique individuals and fun individuals, and some are based on some cousins I have that are what I'd like to various shades of gray with their operating models and things along those lines. So that's the story came from a lot of different disjointed ideas and thoughts and pulled together. And I know we're it looks like we're running a little bit long on time, so I will wrap this right up for you guys.
Awesome. I was actually gonna say it was about time for us to take our break and we're done with our first segment. And this has been so much fun though, and I cannot wait to get both you and the narrator back on the closer we get to to the audiobook being released, because that'll be such a fun show. I can't wait. So I'm definitely going to have to start working on that. And you've already said it, but you have to promise to come back, right? Right. Yeah.
I do promise to come back, and you can fix the time in post, right? Isn't that what James is doing?
Yes, I can. I can fix anything in post, me.
Thank you.
Listen,
so
you both,
much, RB.
You both are delightful, and it was my pleasure for being on the show. And you're both delightful. Thank you very much for having me.
Oh, thank you.
It's
been an absolute pleasure to get to meet you. Finally, I look forward to you coming back on.
Definitely, I'll talk
very
to you
good.
In emails.
Okay, she will stalk you. So, okay, Albert, you have a wonderful rest of your evening, and we'll speak to you again very, very soon.
Thank you very much.
Okay, all the best. And you. Bye-bye.
Cheers. Bye.
Time is against us, but it's flying by tonight, which is we're having fun, I guess, So
Yes, exactly.
We're gonna have a break, and then come back after the break, I guess. That's usually how this works, isn't it? If I remember rightly from last week. So we will be right back.
Panic Room Radio Show is sponsored by Hellbound Books, purveyors of all manner of dark fiction. You can find the publisher along with links to all their available works across platforms at hellboundbookspublishing.com. Hellbound Books is proud to be the first in the indie publishing business with their very own app on both Google Play and the App Store. In the mood for something steamy to read, check out new erotica author Jennifer Lynn's website at jenniferlynnerotica.com. You can find James at his website, www.jameslongmore.com, and Xtina has an author page found on the Hellbound website. Don't forget to follow the Panic Room Radio Show on social media. Our Facebook page, Unofficial The Panic Room Radio Show, Twitter at Panic Room Radio, our YouTube channel, The New Panic Room Radio Show, and come visit our website at www.panicroomradio.com.
part two.
Well, we're back. We're back in another crate of wine for Xtina and a big old wee for me. And went to check on the mother-to-be, and she's still to be, unfortunately. So it's going to be a long night in the Longmore household. I can see that coming. But,
But
it'll be worth it. I just want my baby to be okay.
She will be. Yeah.
I know. I just don't like seeing her all miserable and sort of grumpy we'll get through this, and then happy times, and then of course then there's the whole thing of
puppies.
puppies and making sure she gets her figure back.
I saw a picture you sent. She's looking awfully
Breasty is a word that springs to mind. She looks like a cat. She's got all these udders. The past week she's so uncomfortable lugging these fucking big fat udders around. Yeah. It's like, oh, really feel for her. So, it's all part of nature and everything and whatnot. So, and this is a new experience even for me. So, all good stuff. Anywho, what have we got coming up next?
I'm going to just
anything.
Introduce
Is it just nothing?
Push the button.
Is it just nothing?
No.
I mean, you can tell me. You know, I mean, I'll not blab it. You know.
I'm just going to introduce her, and you push that button, okay? So our next guest
is horror author.
Our next guest is horror author H.R. Boldwood. Woo! Yay!
Hello!
Woo!
Well, hello, James. Hello, Xtina. It's nice to be here this evening.
I was expecting a guy. I was expecting a bloke. What a pleasant surprise.
No blokes.
HR, I mean, how am I supposed to know what that is? Nobody tells me anything, but do people call you HR, or is it, you know, Helen, or what do you go by in real life?
That is my pen name, HR. That's actually my father's initials.
Neat. I never know. We have a lot of authors on who use their initials or an initial or whatever. I never know. I mean, we have one great P. Matten, and I just don't like calling her P. I don't like calling her P. It just seems very disrespectful, I have to say.
I can understand.
This was the night of initials that we had RB and then we have HR and I thought about it earlier, but then I forgot we were going to introduce ourselves as, you know, JL and XM, and we can just have a whole show of just initials.
you could call me JH. I mean, that would be great. I'll go for that.
I like it. I do. So HR is here to talk to us about her book, The Corpse Whisperer, tagline, The Battle Between Good and Bad Just Got Wicked Fun. You know, I love that word. We do not use the word wicked enough. You know, when I was a teenager, that was the cool word. Everything was wicked.
I think it was done to death, though, wasn't it? It was parodied. Oh, that's wicked, that's right. That's dead wicked, and that's like... No, it was killed. But it needs to come back. I mean, it is a good word.
It's a great word.
And I have to say, I had a sneaky peek at the snippet, and this sounds like a hell of a lot of fun, actually. Absolutely. So, yeah, tell us a bit more about it.
Absolutely. Well, the Corpse Whisperer series features Allie Nighthawk. And Allie is a very snarky zombie hunter who has the ability to raise the dead. And she uses that in different capacities in solving crimes and gaining information that would not otherwise be obtainable. And The Corpse Whisperer, which is the first book, came out a couple of years ago, a little more than 2 years ago, actually. Right now we've got 3 books in the series. I've got a 4th book on the way. We just finished our book club promo last week, and we made it to number 3 in the Amazon overall store, and doing
well
in horror
well
comedy,
done.
And number 10 in paranormal urban fantasy.
That is fantastic. Nice. Good for you. Good for
thank
you.
Thank you.
I definitely love the feel, the sound of it. It kind of gave me a kind of a Buffy the Vampire Slayer vibe, and you know, I'm a huge Buffy fan, so I think I'd be a big Ellie fan too. So, yeah.
Oh well, that's good to hear. I need lots of fans these days.
Right.
And yeah, Ellie is a little bit of Anita Blake on steroids. She's got a fondness for leather and Jack on the Rocks. She's got a healthy dose of Stephanie Plum and Rachel Morgan in her, too, but she wouldn't want to admit that. She's her own girl. And we have a host of characters that are featured in this series along with Ellie, and they're all pretty distinctive characters and having a lot of fun developing those characters as the series continues.
Yeah, now when you first started book one, did you know it was going to be a series, or was it just kind of a surprise to you?
No, I actually developed the first book from a short story that I wrote that featured at least 2 more characters. And I thought, well, a lot of publishers like going with a series vibe. So I wrote the first book, and then I actually outlined the rest of the series, or at least the next 2-3 books, so that I would know where to take that series when I started it and continued working on it.
I love that idea. I know that there's sometimes James had a short story that I remember reading that and thinking, this is not, these characters, this setting, this whole story is not short story material. This is a novel here. And, you know, I can actually see those characters, James, being a series. You know, you can take them all sorts of adventures, and I can definitely see it. So, yeah, James, you got to get working on that one.
I promise.
Definitely
I will.
A character-driven series, for sure.
Yeah, I do. I love to just get caught up in a long series. I really do. And just because it gives you a feeling of you know, familiarity, and almost like you're a part of the world too. You know, you're friends or something. And yeah, I love that. I really do. So
well, this is an urban fantasy series where it takes place in modern day. And the original book, The Corpse Whisperer, pretty much takes place in Cincinnati, and the second book takes us from Cincinnati to New Orleans to the world of voodoo and hoodoo. And so it branches out a little bit, and it comes back again to Cincinnati in future books, and we're going to take it a few different places, but right now that's pretty much where we are.
It sounds like a lot of fun. I definitely want to hear more. Do we have an excerpt to read?
Well, we do. Do you want me to read it?
Yay.
Do you want to read it? Or?
Oh, I, you know, you just
no, you
just do
not
you
want, do
not
want to expect her to read it. No, not under any circumstances. She's terrible.
Well,
she really is.
I'm happy to read an excerpt if you would like. I think I'd start with the beginning of book one. And
okay.
If you want me to get right into it, I can dig into it now.
Okay, go for it.
No time like the present. Okay, well, the first chapter is titled The World is Batshit Crazy. There aren't many good reasons for raising the dead, but there are plenty of bad ones. Greed, revenge, and absolute lunacy top the list. I'm Allie Nighthawk, and raising the dead happens to be my only talent. People are willing to pay for it. Go figure. I'm one of the few corpse whisperers who puts the toys away when clients are finished playing with them. Away as in hermetically sealed, back in their coffins, with their disease-ravaged brains neutralized. That's shop talk for scattered, smothered, covered in chunk. The last thing we need is zombies clawing up through the dirt like demented whack-a-moles and gnawing on the residents of Cincinnati. I was born a corpse whisperer 26 years and too many zombies ago to count. It's a genetic thing, like blonde hair or blue eyes, except that it's raising the dead. Yeah, okay, it's not exactly the same. It involves different genetic markers. By a vowel, people, the concept's the same. The supernatural abilities that come with this gift have increased with each generation. That makes me very good at what I do, and a little dangerous. If you raise deadheads, you'd better be able to put them down. Whispers like me take care of business. I can remember a time when you never saw biters shambling in the streets. But things have changed. Vampires aren't just for breakfast anymore, and the dead have become disposable pawns for necromancers. Someone had to ante up. Looks like I won the lotto. Imagine my delight. You should thank me, really, because the world is batshit crazy. No matter how much the rotters reek like sun-baked sushi, no matter how many of their orphaned body parts skitter after me like fleshbots in search of a host, at the end of the day, reruns of Dancing with the Stars, a bag of Doritos, and a Jack Daniel's slushy have always been enough to take off the edge. At least they were until a couple of months ago, when my nemesis, a very spiteful necromancer, took his vengeance on me by doing something so heinous I swore I'd never raise the dead again. Ever. I'd still hunt down your occasional garden variety deadhead. I mean, somebody has to put the freaking flesh eaters down. But raisings were off the table. Told the Cincinnati Police Department about my updated business model yet. They pay me as a subcontractor to raise schmucks for evidentiary reasons, and they weren't going to appreciate my change of heart. I'd been ducking their calls for a while when a CPD cop banged on my door and forced the issue. Allie Nighthawk? Get lost, I said, slamming the door, but he blocked it with his foot. Jesus, lady, don't you ever answer your phone. Well, don't you take a hint. I'm Rico De Palma, the department's new liaison for a paranormal crimes unit. Your partner. The guy sounded like he'd swallowed a pine cone. I gave him two sarcastic thumbs up and used my Mr. Rogers voice. Well, aren't you special? He peered at me over the top of his Oakleys. Six of us drew straws, lady, and I lost. I need you to raise Cephas McCoy for questioning in the disappearance of Twyla Harris, a six-year-old from Price Hill. I'd read about that case in the paper. Cute kid snatched right out from in her own home. Rico had piqued my interest. You guys figured for the High Point child abduction murders. Yeah, we were bringing him in for questioning when some kid's father got wind of it and took him out with a .32 to the chest. Rico stepped aside and held the door open. Grab your coat, let's go. Seriously? He wanted me to raise a child killer. I'm not going, I said. Excuse me? I don't do raisings anymore. And even if I did, I wouldn't raise a child killer. Sorry. My game, my rules. Screw your rules. This kid needs you. I reached for the door again, but his gunboat was still parked on the threshold. Move it or lose it, I said. Corpse whisper in my ass. You're nothing but hype. No wonder your last partner didn't last very long. He was referring to Harry Delk, a damn fine cop. Why De Palma thought he could fill Harry's shoes was a mystery. He curled his lip and turned to walk away. Thanks for nothing. Why don't you stick your rules up that hard case ass of yours and rotate? It's a smug bastard. Who did he think he was? I plowed forward, knocking us both onto the porch floor and clocked him so hard his sunglasses flew into the bushes. I don't know how far you want me to read, but I was going to...
Oh,
that was brilliant. That was perfect.
So good. Oh, my gosh. You know, we have, you know, vampires and we have zombies. And, like, how did you come up with this? This is a totally, you know, corpse whisperer. I don't think I've ever even heard of such a thing. That's so unique to me. So, yeah, how did you come up with this? I love the idea.
Well, the original short story I wrote back in 2012, and zombies were all the rage. And it was funny because I actually work in several different writing groups, and I was kind of developing the short story, and I didn't really have a title for it. And we were all chatting about it, and one of the guys says, well, this, you know, this corpse whisperer character of yours. And I said, oh, my God, that's the title. You just found my title. So I can't even claim that the title was my own, but, you know, it was a combination of efforts on all of our parts. But that's where it came from. So it came about, like I said, in 2012, and zombies were the big thing. And I just wanted to create a very snarky character that would have just a wicked sense of humor, a hair-trigger temper that tended to speak before she thought and found herself paying for it a lot of the time, you know. she just doesn't quite get that, you know, she loves her attitude problem, even if everybody else doesn't.
Yes, I like her. I do. I definitely, and then, you know, you mentioned Dancing with the Stars, and I'm thinking, I am there, you know.
Well, that actually figures into the novel over the long run. Allie gets involved in a few different little twists and turns along the way, but she's also assigned to bodyguard a mobster turned state's evidence, and it just so happens the reason she's assigned along with her partner Rico is that he was bitten by a zombie, and he's taking a medication that is designed to stave off the symptoms, but there is no cure. If you turn or you begin to turn, you will ultimately one day go all the way. You will turn.
Mm-hmm.
So he's only got so much time left. He's a very obnoxious character, and he and Allie don't immediately mesh. But the story is the character arc and the relationship that develops between Allie and the mobster and everything that happens before the end of the book. So, and I don't want to give away too much, but there's a lot that happens in between here, and that's the fun of it all.
It does sound so much fun. I have this big smile on my face. I mean, sometimes we have, you know, the authors come in and they tell us about our book, and like, I can't see it sometimes. And I'm like, man, this would make a cool show. I would totally watch this show.
Well, I'm glad
really
that you think so, because I've often said the same thing. And, you know, I would love to talk about screenplays. I think, actually, you haven't heard a lot of the dialogue yet. A lot of this that I read to you in the opening chapters didn't contain a lot of dialogue. But her dialogue is very sharp, very snappy. I think it's written for the screen, honestly. But
yeah.
Looking forward to the day that could come.
Now, speaking of zombies, are you a fan of zombies? Did you get into The Walking Dead or any of the other zombie things
came
out?
I watched it for quite a few years, but I had to rethink zombies when it came to Allie's book. So the zombies in Allie's world are a little different. There's a virus that can cause people to become zombie-like. It's mostly you're infected because you're bitten. But as it turns out, there is an evil necromancer, as I mentioned early in the book. And he's playing with that virus a little bit. So it's not just an organic virus. There's a synthetic version as well. And zombies are not just either slow walking or fast running, like, you know, World War Z or whatever. There's different stages of infection. And depending on how long zombies have been risen, you know, are they freshies? Are they newly dead and just risen? Mm-hmm. Or are they middle-of-the-road zombies? Or are they what she calls corpsicles? Corpsicles are the ones that, you know, they leave their body parts trailing behind them and they're falling apart
as they
walk. And you smell them before you see them, you know. And so zombies, I had to really think the whole gambit of how does the zombie virus work? How do the zombies work? So she's got her own world of zombies in this book, and it's fairly well defined here so that you can follow along. When she talks about freshies, you know she's talking about newly turned zombies, and the corpsicles are the old ones, and there's a whole study of caraviscology, which would be the study of zombieism, and there's a study of the virus itself. So it's
definitely a lot going on. Yeah. I'm definitely, and for it being a series, I definitely, and here we go again. When you make out the signed copy, that's XTINA.
Got it.
Awesome. But yeah, I was thinking of, you know, because I was a huge fan of The Walking Dead when it first came out, and even for a few years, I don't know what they did toward the end. Like I don't know. Things got weird, and I'm not sure. I'm still with them, but I mean, I was good up until Glenn died. I think that's when I kind of stopped watching. But for me, I don't think I don't know. I did not notice right away the how the zombies were, I guess, decomposing even more as the series went on. Like, I didn't get it at first, and then I was like, wow, they look, oh my gosh, they look so much worse. And that was a kind of cool, I think, because I think I just imagined they would just always look the same. But so that's
in Allie's world, they do. They decompose, and then they change as they age. And and I'm kind of with you on that whole Glenn thing. I had to watch through splayed fingers, but I will say that Negan captivated me. Jeffrey Dean Morgan, I just thought, man, that he was excellent.
Oh, I know.
He's
dreamy anyway.
He is. And just the smile that he can wear when he's bashing someone to death. I mean, it's just eerie and creepy, and I love that. But it kind of fell apart for me after the Negan, when Negan came in. And Allie, you know, there is violence in this series, but it's funny because there's been quite a few people who thought, okay, it sounds kind of funny, it sounds kind of quirky, I'll give it a read. I don't like zombies, but I'll try it. And then they read it and they're like, oh, well, I can do this. This was fun, because the violence in this is not over the top. And it even at times becomes a catalyst for humor. And there's an awful lot of humor in this series.
Based on
her attitudes and the way she conducts herself. She can raise the dead when she has to, and she can put the zombies down when she has to. And one thing you can count on is there's always going to be a trail of catastrophe behind her. It's never easy.
No, but I mean, if it were easy, then it would be a really quick read, and we'd be done and just be going, oh, well, okay, there was that. But so, definitely we need some kind of conflicts going on. But I love horror with comedy thrown in. I think that is my favorite. And I think it's because a lot of times when you have something horrific going on, or even, you know, just something dark or what have you, that it just breaks up the you know, horrible stuff that's going on with a little comedic, you know, stuff going on there. So I definitely, that's the kind of horror I like to read, something where I'm going to be scared one second and then laugh the next minute, you know.
Well, and I tried to make the characters deep enough and their relationships deep enough. There are a few things that happen throughout the series. Not all of them nice and not all of them kind, but there's a definite arc to Allie, who starts out as just this balls to the wall. Nobody's going to stop me. Nobody's going to get in my way, and I don't need anybody. I don't want partners. I don't like partners. She worked with Harry. You find out a little bit more about Harry, her prior partner, in the prequel, and that was the last book that I wrote. But she definitely has an arc, and she becomes aware of her own shortcomings, and I'm not going to necessarily say she works on them, maybe a little, but her shortcomings are pointed out to her, and she becomes aware that she's got some deficits along the way. She had a difficult upbringing that comes out in these books as well. I've already said it's genetic. Well, you know, we get into the whole background of, how did she get this power? How did she learn to use it? And what kind of an education did that take? And so that's what the second book, Corpse Whisperer Sworn, gets into, that takes place in New Orleans in the hoodoo voodoo world, and with all the spells. And so it's a combination of modern zombieism with the old voodoo hoodoo type of zombieism.
Nice. Nice. Now, you know, I've heard James talk before about, he thinks that he would get bored writing a series that'd be, you know, just the same old, you know, the characters and stuff. But do you ever find that that you want to write something different, or, you know, is it just like Allie just has more stories to tell, so you're not really ever done with it?
I think Allie has a lot of stories to tell, but and I don't want to give away too much, but in the book that I'm writing now, there is a character that I think is going to take off into a whole different been on a whole different series.
Spinoff. I like those. I love a spinoff. I do.
Well, yeah, awesome. When you've got a good story to tell and you've got good characters, and I've been very fortunate. I mean, in I've had a lot of kind reviews and a lot of people that have commented on the depth of the characters and how different they are and how they feed off each other. And that's great. That works for me. If I'm making the readers happy, I am happy. And,
definitely. And if you have if you have a really good solid world that you're writing in, you can do so much. You can go off on different spinoffs, and then it's always nice for the reader too, because, you know, you have something that's familiar but at the same time different. So there's so much you can do. I'm excited. I think we should pitch this to the networks and.
Bless your heart. So do so, I think that's a fine. Yeah.
Now,
Allie's got an old elderly next door neighbor that gets into the act, and she's got a zombie sniffing bulldog named Headbutt, and an attacked pterodactyl, which is really just her bird that she named Kulu. They get into the act, and from book to book, all of these characters grow. She's got an FBI partner as well as the Cincinnati PD partners. She's on a task force because the virus breaks out and there's more and more people that are becoming infected. So it's a bigger world that continues to grow with more characters and more secondary plot lines that grow and change, and all those characters need to develop, not just Allie.
Right. I'm excited. I definitely want to read this. So you are going to, we're almost out of time for our show, but you have to promise to come back.
Oh, well, I would love to.
Yay. I love it.
Anytime you want me, you let me know. I'm back.
I don't give them much choice because it's always awkward if they were to say, well, no, that's okay. And we did have, James, didn't we have a couple weeks ago, one of the guests was like, I don't have anything wrong with you. What did he say? Something like that? It was cute.
It was like the least amount of enthusiasm from anybody ever. I suppose there could be worse things, you know.
I would love to come back anytime you want me on your
definitely. And tell us real quick where we can find you online.
Absolutely. Well, the books are now available through Amazon, Apple, Nook, Google, and Kobo. My website is www.hrboldwood.com. And anybody that wants to reach out to me can email me at hrboldwood@gmail.com. Also, if I have just a second here, I've got some short stories that are out in the world, in the publishing world, and there's a couple things coming up. There's an audiobook of an anthology called Don't Cry to Mama, which is a fabulous, fabulous anthology published by Jolly Horror. And it's out in print, but it's also now out on Audible. And that contains a story that I wrote titled Full Moon Crazy, which was a lot of fun. And in September, there's another anthology coming out from Bridget's Gate Press, and that's titled Weird Tales. And it contains my story, Absinthe Dreams.
Awesome.
Got all sorts of irons in the fire here, and I thank you for letting me plug those.
Definitely. Thank you so much for coming on the show, and I definitely cannot wait to have you back, HR, and we'll talk to you soon. Thank you.
Well, you're very welcome, and I don't know if I mentioned the names of the secondary books, but there's The Corpse Whisperer Sworn is the second book, and the prequel is Life Among the Tombstones. So those are all three titles and all available through those distribution chains. And right
fantastic.
Now, actually, The Corpse Whisperer is free through the end of the month. So if you're looking for a free Kindle download, give it a read, and then maybe you'll like it and come back for the rest.
I will definitely do that. Thank you so much for coming on the show, and I can't wait to have you back.
Well, thank you. You have a great evening. Thanks for meeting me, guys.
Thanks a lot, HR. Speak to you again very soon. Okay, bye-bye.
Good night.
What?
Well, time has beaten us. Again, I don't know. We start the show, oh, God, an hour and a half, you know. And here we are. No, I don't mean like that. I think, well, you know, because it's late for me. You know, I usually start flying around 9 o'clock these days. But, and yet we get into it, and I'm always disappointed that we've run out of time. So, but
me too,
we have, so I'm afraid it is time to say goodnight, Xtina.
Goodnight, Xtina.
Goodnight.